Okay. Today we're starting a new chapter, Perek Lamed Dalet 34. And I'll just show, I'll just give it to you. That's 30, here we are. Okay, so. Last week, we finished Lamed Gimel, and this one is a continuation of 33. So let's just summarize the crux of the concept of 33. Do you want to look in? No. No problem. So the crux of the essence of the chapter 33 was that he explored another way to simcha, to the idea of joy. That was to internalize the concept of Achdus Hashem, the oneness of God. He went through the whole process of how everything is a bottle and completely one with Hashem and so on and so forth. That's the Emunah. And the Simcha that came from that was that when we reflect on that reality and we internalize it properly, the Simcha becomes tremendous because we realize how close Hashem is with us. The analogy he gave was that he's living with us, not just like we living in his palace, but he's living with in our sort of shack that we create, which is really the beginning of the concept of Dira B'Tachtonim. Then he said that the Simcha obviously flows because then after that, keeping mitzvahs is a given, because like it says in the Gemara Makkos, that the 630 mitzvahs, but then eventually Bo Chavakuk came, and he made it all on one pillar. He said it's Emunah, it's all about Emunah, because Emunah is really the essence of it all. Once you understand, you've internalized that Hashem is with you all the time and you're really part of Hashem's reality, then obviously you have the power to overcome any obstacle standing in the way of mitzvahs. Doing mitzvahs is the only reality, and therefore it just becomes a given. And then he talks about the double simcha, as we did last week, the double simcha. Double simcha is not just that we are happy with Hashem's closeness to us, but that we are doubly happy because we understand Hashem's simcha and Hashem's nachas ruach that he's getting from the amazing thing of taking something which is dark and turning it into light. We are dark, we klipa, abdaf shabamis, and it's a world of darkness. So when we use it out, we really have that emunah, we internalize that emunah and bring in the light of Hashem into a place which is really darkness, because it's designed that way that Hashem's closeness should be concealed and Hashem's presence should be concealed. That creates the biggest simcha, because that is the nachas of Hashem. When we, every time we do that, every time we go one step forward and we subjugate the darkness and we turn it into light, it's skafi and it's hapcha and so on, we generate this tremendous simcha. Okay, that's the quick summary of last chapter. Now, in this perek, he addresses the following. At the end of the day, even when you internalize it, right? And like he said last time also, that one of the proofs we've internalized is that it brings to simcha. It goes both ways. In other words, internalizing the emunah brings simcha, but also one of the proofs that we've internalized it is that it brings simcha. Because it becomes happy. In other words, it becomes our happiness, it becomes who we are, right? But nevertheless, we also have to be real, and that is that most of us don't internalize this properly, right? It doesn't become constantly part of our consciousness. Yes, we understand it, we learn it, we internalize it to a certain degree. Hopefully it motivates us to do Torah mitzvahs. And we feel it more when we're learning about it and when we trying to internalize it intellectually and emotionally and so on. But to say that we are absolutely living with a samunah, we actually feel one with Hashem and bottle to Hashem in every single moment of the day, that's a far-fetched idea. That's not really what it is. However, and he's going to tell us what to do about that. In other words, how to engage in certain activities where we do, guided and inspired by the samunah, do things that we know that Hashem is very present there consciously, right? In a real true way. So he'll go to the strategy. But before he does that, he talks about those previous to us who did feel this way, who did live this way, right? And we'll see. Before we do that, I want to mention, next week I'm going to take off a little bit. So when we're doing the shir, so I want to actually try and finish the chapter today because Lamed Hay starts like a new thing. So we'll see how we go. Okay. Before I forget, I just want to remind you about that. Okay, now, it says like this, Perek Lamed Dalet, V'ne Mudazois. We need to make sure we understand the following and be based on the Medrash and the Zohar. She'ha'ovois hein hein ha'merkova. There's an expression brought in Chassidus a lot, coming from a Medrash and a Zohar, that the forefathers were the chariot of Hashem, the wagon of Hashem. Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov were the wagon of Hashem. What does that mean? The simple pshat is that just like a rider sits on a chariot, right? So too, Hashem sits on his throne of glory. And in this world, he rests through the forefathers. They were such great tzaddikim. So Hashem was sort of riding on them, right? He's riding on them, he was connecting to them, and through them, his name and his destination, so to speak, was revealed in the world, right? That's a simple pshat. But Chassidus and explains the pnimistic pshat, in other words, the inner pshat, the inner interpretation, based on the Zohar and so on. This expression that the Ovis, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, were like a chariot, it's a story about their bittul. Not just about what they were here in this world for, but it's about their bittul. What does that mean? It means like this, that when we say someone's a merkava, someone's a wagon of Hashem, a chariot of Hashem, it means they are completely bottled to Hashem. Why? What's the analogy? The analogy is that just like a chariot, a wagon, right, has absolutely no independent will, right? Its entire movement is up to the rider, yeah? Mm-hmm. So too, by the Ovis HaKadoshim, the holy forefathers, right? They had reached a level where they were so detached from the physicality of this world that they had trained themselves, so to speak, to internalize the concept we learned in last perek, that everything is Hashem and everything is one with Hashem, and therefore their whole existence was the Ratzon of Hashem, was the will of Hashem, right? In other words, at any time, their limbs, their organs, their body was just there to fulfill Hashem's Ratzon, right? That's who they were. And he says, that means Shekol Yemeyem, right? All their days, L'Oilam, forever, ever. Lo Hifsiku Afilu Sho'achas, they never interrupted even one moment. Melekasher Daitam V'Nishmasam, to connect their knowledge and their neshama leribayin ha'ilamim, to the master of the universe, but bitul hanal, with this aforementioned bitul that we talked about in the previous parak, liyichuda yisbarach, to the oneness of Hashem, right? In other words, like this, even a regular guy who's very, very high madrega, right? Not the obvious, well, not Moshe Rabbeinu, as we'll soon see, and he toils tremendously to internalize the message. And he does. And he's really engaged and he's consciously engaged in the will of Hashem all the time. At the end of the day, he's still a separate being. In other words, he thinks for himself, he's independent. He just constantly works. How do we know this? Because as soon as he finishes doing one thing, the struggle is still there. So obviously he's not completely one with Hashem, right? Even if it's a very high madriga, even the Beinoni of Tanya, right? Which is, you know, quite a high level as we learned. It might be guided by this notion, but it's still not complete bittul. The Ovois were complete bittul. They were complete. The whole metzius, the whole definition, the whole essence was just carrying out Hashem's will, right? I'll tell you a nice little thing. I might have told you this before, but in a different context. But it's something I just remember hearing from my father when I was in high school. He told me this word. I even remember why he told me this word, because we had a thing in school that every Friday, one of the students had to say something by the assembly. And it was my turn, it was Parshas Vayera. So he told me this word. But it's a fundamental word. So we know that at the beginning of Vayera, Avraham Avinu is talking to Hashem, and the Malachim appear, right? So what does Avraham do? Avraham says to Hashem, excuse me for a moment, I'm going to take care of the guests. I'll be back, kind of thing, right? He says, don't go away, I'll be back, right? So the Gemara says, we learn from there an amazing thing. We learn that gedoylach nasas archim, that being hospitable to guests, is as great as receiving the Shekhinah. or greater, sorry, greater than receiving the Shechinah. Here, Avraham Avinu is at the, what could be better? Hashem is talking to him, right? He's having an audience with Hashem. He's coming to visit him because it was after the bris. The revelation of the Shechinah, right? Now, he says, excuse me, he goes, takes to the guests, right? That's what the Gemara says. So the famous question is, the source that we know that from is from Avraham Avinu. How did he know that? Our source is him. Where did he get it from? Right? How did he know this concept? The answer is, he was talking to Hashem, and the Malachim were coming, and there were guests there, and he felt himself leaving Hashem. That's it. Because he's so trained, his body was so trained to be in sync with the will of Hashem, so he felt himself going. That's how we know. It's an example of this idea that we say that the Ovis were the Merkava. They were total chariots of Hashem, the wagons of Hashem, no independent will, they just did what the rider really wants anyways, right? Because obviously when we say that taking care of guests is greater than receiving the presence of the Shekhinah, obviously that's the will of Hashem, otherwise we wouldn't say it's greater, right? Okay. By the way, that concept also, Tom, remember, that concept also answers an interesting little question at the end of the same parasha of Ayera when we have the Akedah, right? This is where it went wrong a little bit, one time. What happened? Avraham Avinu was tested to take his son, right? So he takes his son, puts him on the Mizbech, and he's about to shecht him. When he's about to shecht him, it says in the Pasuk, Vayishlach Avraham es Yodoy, Avraham Avinu sent his hand, Vayikach es Amacheles, and he took the knife to shecht Yitzchak. Then there's a call out from Hashem, Avraham, no, stop. Don't shecht him and take him off and so on, right? Okay. But the language is very strange. What does it mean he sent his hand? It should have just said Avraham Avinu took the knife to shecht his son, and then there was the voice came out from heaven. What do you mean he sent his hand, right? So what happened was like this. Here was a very strange thing. Hashem tested Avraham, which means Hashem hid from Avraham to a certain degree. He told him to do something which really wasn't his ultimate will, right? It wasn't the Ratzon of Hashem. But he did it, and he came to the Mizbech, because he thought it was the Ratzon Hashem, puts Yitzchak on the Mizbech, and in Avraham Avinu's mind, it's now automatic that his hand will take the knife and shecht Yitzchak. And his hand didn't move. And Avraham Avinu worried, like, I thought I'm in sync with the will of Hashem. So Vayishlach Avraham es Yodoy, he sent his hand to take the knife. He had to consciously send his hand to do it. Right? We, most of the time, we have to send our body to do what Hashem wants. But this is one time, it was an exception. Vayishlach Avraham es Yodoy, he sent his hand to do it. And then a moment realized that nothing had gone wrong. It actually wasn't the will of Hashem to begin with, which is why his hand wasn't doing it. Okay, interesting word. All right, so that's the obvious. Then he continues, and he says, it's not just the obvious, but v'achareyem kol anavim. After the obvious, all the prophets were like this, especially when they prophesied. Now, when they prophesied, they were just in a different world. Their body was completely in sync with Hashem's voice, right? To the point where we say with this expression that when the Navi was speaking, it was really Hashem's voice. There's this concept called, we say with Moshe Rabbeinu mostly, but even with other Navim, that their throat was completely in sync and they were just talking the words of Hashem, right? Kol Echad, each one, the theme Madregas Nishmasei Vasagase. Each one according to the Madrega of his Neshama, or his understanding. Even when we say that a person is totally bottle and feels the bittle, not everyone is the same, everyone feels on a different level, everyone according to the thing. And then he says, Umadregas Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom, the Madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu, Hi Oila Kolon. That surpassed them all. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, Chassidus says many times, was the ultimate bittle. Ultimate bittle, right? Sha'omru Olav, that we say by Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, we say, Sh'omru Olav, we say by Moshe Rabbeinu, Shechina medaberes mitoy groinoy shel Moshe. This is the phrase that said about Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Shechina, the divine presence, was speaking through the throat of Moshe Rabbeinu. Whenever he talked, it was really Hashem talking. right? That doesn't mean, by the way, that he didn't exist. And it was like a different voice coming out of him. No, it was his voice. That's the point. It was his voice, and yet it was the Shekhinah talking. Because he and the Shekhinah were one. Right? You say this with regard to Sefer Devarim, that even we say it wasn't Mamash Hashem's words, it was Moshe Rabbeinu's own words, so to speak, but still part of the Chumash, because it was him processing Hashem's words. It was him, right? And this is greater than other Nevi'im. Other Nevi'im had to kind of lose themselves to experience this. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't lose himself. Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate bittul, that he was, as a body, as a normal person, constantly, day in and day out, he was an embodiment of Hashem, and what he spoke was Hashem speaking. Even more than the obvious, it seems. Even more than the obvious, that says, Oila Kolona, that was the ultimate, right? Ultimate bittul. Okay. Now, he says an interesting thing. He says, a similar experience, Zochu Yisrael, the Yidden, merited the Maimed Har Sinai. Hashem gave the Torah at Har Sinai, where there was Mamash Hashem talking to them, there was an absolute revelation of Hashem. In other words, what does that mean? What happened at Har Sinai was, there was, except for Har Sinai, for most of the world, right? The oneness of Hashem that we described in the last chapter is never revealed. You got to work at it. You got to understand it. You got to internalize it, right? What is revealed is that there is a world, an independent world. That's why Hashem designed the world, right? At Har Sinai, there was a full-blown revelation of Hashem. Hashem was talking to them. Hashem, whatever means revelation of Hashem, I don't know. We were there, but we weren't physically there, so I can't tell you, right? But it means it was a complete revelation of Hashem, which means the oneness of Hashem, Anoichi Hashem Eloikecha, was revealed. And therefore, this was the rare opportunity, not just for the Avos, not just Moshe Rabbeinu, but for the entire Klal Yisrael to experience that oneness in real time, in real consciousness. Right? The problem is this. Look what happens, it says. Rak, the only thing is, Shlo Yochlo Lispol. They actually weren't on the level to actually tolerate it. Not like the obvious, and certainly not like Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Kamaymer Azal, Chazal tell us, Shal Kol Dibur, it's Gemara Shabbos, the Shal Kol Dibur U Dibur, Shal Kol Dibur Porcha Nishmasa. It says a fascinating thing happened in Matan Torah. Every time Hashem said one of the Ten Commandments, the Neshama left their body. Couldn't handle that bittul. All that bittul meant was that they just become incorporated Hashem's existence and they ceased to exist. And it says there that he doesn't bring the whole Gemara here, but he brings that Hashem, between every commandment, the Neshama's left their body, and Hashem brought them back to life using the dew that he's going to use when Mashiach comes to resurrect everyone. That's what it says. So there was Tchiyas HaMeisim, right?
Did he say all 10 commandments? Wouldn't there be 2 in
there? That's a very, very fascinating topic. So yes, we know the Gemara tells us he only said 2 and they couldn't handle it there. But on the other hand, there's a pasuk that says in Matan Torah, by Dabar Elokim, Hashem spoke, is Kol Advarim El, all these things. So there's a whole thing. So it seems like Hashem said all the 10, many Mepharshim learn different ways. One very standard way to understand it is Hashem first said all the 10 commandments completely together, or one after another, in a way that wasn't actually that discernible. And then he started again giving the first 2 and Moshe Rabbeinu of the 8. But in this Gemara obviously follows that there was all 10, because between each one there, Neshama left the body. Okay. Now what does it mean Neshama left the body? He says, Lal Terebbe, Shehu Inyan Bittul Mimitziya Sanal. That's real Bittul. That's complete Bittul. Right? Now, which is fantastic. It's an experience of complete Bittul. The problem is that it's not what's supposed to happen. Meaning it happened in Matan Torah, but it's not supposed to happen every day. Right? We've spoken about this many times. The purpose of creation is Dira B'Tachtoinim. Dira B'Tachtoinim means to let the Hashem's oneness be revealed in the world. Which means for us, it means that we have to be able somehow to be a person that is a yesh, an independent existence, and in that dark existence, there should be the revelation of the oneness of Hashem, in a way that we can tolerate. Otherwise, it's no good. Otherwise, we're not fulfilling the purpose of creation. It's very nice. They all died in Matan Torah, and they felt this absolute bittul, and they disintegrated because of the bittul, right? But that's not the ultimate purpose, right? Okay, so what happens? Lochem, therefore, Miyad Omar Lohem, immediately after Matan Torah, Hashem said to the Jewish people, Lasas Lo Mishkan, to make a Mishkan. Yeah? To make a Mishkan. Why? Because on the one hand, they weren't able to tolerate this revelation. On the other hand, there must be a place in the world where there is a complete revelation of Hashem's oneness, right? Which wasn't going to happen in them as people because it's not possible. So what does Hashem do right afterwards? He tells them to make a Mishkan, right? Although it says here, he told them right away. That's actually a subject of the big machlokes. He's following Avi and Tanya, the view of the Zohar, that the command to make a Mishkan came right after Matan Torah. It's not so simple. According to many views, it was after the Chet HaEgel. There's three views, actually. There's one view that the commandment and the building was right after the Chet HaEgel. That was much later. Other view was that the command was before, but the doing was after. Otherwise, the Zohar says everything was before. Anyway, whatever it is. But they at least started the process, right? But it was close to Matan Torah that Hashem said they should make a Mishkan. And what's in the Mishkan? A boy, Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in the Mishkan, there's the Kodesh HaKadoshim that was the Holy of Holies. La'ashra Shekhinase, where Hashem's Shekhinah was really revealed, right? Shehu Gilu Yichude Yisbarak, which is really the oneness of Hashem, Moshe's brother, Lakaman, like we can explain later in later chapters and so on. Just to give you a little bit of a explanation of what this means. What does it mean that there was a full-blown revelation of Hashem's Shekhinah there? I mean, we know Hashem is everywhere. This is one of the foundations of Yiddishkeit. Meloichol Eretz Kvedoi, Hashem fills the entire world. There's a Zohar that says, Les Asar Ponamine, there's no place that's void of Hashem's presence. Everything is Hashem. But the difference is he revealed there, right? Is he revealed? Although, yes, he's everywhere, but is he revealed? The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Beis HaMikdash in general, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Holy of Holies specifically, was a place where Hashem's presence was completely revealed. It was one place where you had a Mishkan, it was a physical object there, and nevertheless, Hashem's things was completely revealed. And therefore, there was that level of bittul in the Mishkan. But that was one place, which is the ultimate purpose of Dira B'Tachtonim, something that will happen when Mashiach comes, the whole world will be like that. The whole world will be like a Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? Correct. But we knew about it. At least we knew that it was happening. Why? I'll give you, well, first of all, the Kohen Gadol went there once a year. But at least there was that tangible dogma, that tangible example of a place where the Shekhinah is completely revealed, right? One of the things we know, just to give you an example, what do we mean the essence of Hashem and the oneness of Hashem was revealed there? So one of the miracles, first of all, the Beis HaMikdash in general is a place of miracles, right? Which is part of Hashem's revelation. But besides that, the Kodesh HaKadoshim had the specific miracle, which is impossible to understand, which is what we call Nimna HaNimnois, the impossible of the impossible, where the Orayin, right, famous thing, Mokim Orayin Eina Min Amido, that the Orayin didn't take up any space, which means, yeah, everyone's familiar with that? In other words, let's say this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? The Kodesh HaKadoshim was, I think, 20 Amos long or something, or 10 Amos maybe, 10 Amos, sorry, 10 Amos. And if you measured from one wall to the other, it was 10 Amos. If you mentioned from one wall to the beginning of the Orayin, it was 5 Amos, and from the end of the Orayin to the wall was 5 Amos. And yet the whole thing was 10 Amos. So the Orayin took up space. In fact, it had to take up space because there was a halacha of how big it had to be. 2.5 amos, 1.5, whatever the case is, it had to physically take up space, and yet it didn't take up space at all. It took up space, but it didn't take up space because it was still just 10 amos, right? Now, we don't know what that means because it's just impossibility. See, miracles can be understood, but not that kind of miracle. We can understand that the nature of water is to flow, but Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, it split. Okay, very nice. We can understand that normally the frogs don't run around Egypt, and this time it did, right? Those are all things that are miraculous, but they supersede nature. In other words, it's supernature taking over nature. Or the miracle takes place within nature, whatever. But the bottom line is, you don't have that opposite, right? Where two things are happening at the same time. Two things can only happen at the same time when you have the revelation of the essence of Hashem. Because that's the idea. The essence of Hashem is higher than space and not space. Excuse me, is higher than infinity and finiteness, is higher than everything, and everything can coexist, and it makes no difference. And that's the idea of bittul. In other words, there's space there, but there's no space, because it's bottled to Hashem. The space is there, but it's part of Hashem's infinity. So it doesn't take up space. Take up space, it doesn't take up space. And that was a place where you had the full revelation, like Har Sinai. It's just like you say, people didn't hang around there. And the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, when he hang around, then he wasn't up to scratch. It was a problem, right? As we say in the second place, something it didn't last very long. Didn't die right away, almost always, but they didn't. Right, they didn't last very long. Okay. Good. Now, that's very nice when there's a Beis HaMikdash. How do we connect to the presence of Hashem now? So he brings the Gemara. It says like this. Mishachara Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Eila Kodesh Baruch Hu Boi Lomoi Mishkan U'mochan L'shiftoi. Where is Hashem dressed? Where does Hashem express himself in this world? Who Yehuda is Baruch? Where is the oneness of Hashem manifested? Ela Arba Amois Shel Halacha. The four, it's an expression. The four cubits of halacha, in other words, Torah study. Hashem is in his Torah. That doesn't mean if we learn Torah, we feel it that much, but at least we connect to it, right? What is Torah, and especially halacha? Shuretzoynoi yisbarech v'chochmasi, that's the will of Hashem and the wisdom of Hashem. Hamelubashim b'halachos aruchos lefoneinu, which all come in to the halachos and the mitzvahs which we learn about when we learn Torah, right? In other words, what happens when a person learns Torah? Right? It says in the Gemara a few times that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, where did Hashem go? In this world, right? He went to his Torah. He's in his Torah. I mean, in general, his Torah and him are one, but this is where the presence of Hashem is. Because there's no greater revelation of Hashem than his will and his wisdom. Especially his Ratzon, his will. In other words, it's him. What is will? Will means the manifestation of him. Right? We explained this before, the idea of a will, the idea of a ratzon is very deep in the neshama. It's really what the neshama wants. It's the neshama's expression. It's a manifestation of the neshama. So too Hashem, even more Hashem. The ratzon of Hashem is him, right? It's an extension of him. That's what we explained. I think it was a few weeks ago, we explained the idea of paraduma. I think we explained it, I'm not sure. That all mitzvahs are really the ratzon of Hashem and they start off without a reason. They don't have a reason. Why don't they have a reason? Because they're just him. They don't need a reason. They're not explainable. Right? So therefore, Hashem put his ratzon into the Torah so we should be able to learn his ratzon, understand his ratzon, and fulfill his ratzon. So therefore, when we learn, so that's where Hashem is, his ratzon. When we learn Torah and we bring the Torah into our brain, we're bringing Hashem into our brain. We're bringing the Shekhinah into our brain. Right? That's a very, very powerful thing. Velochein, therefore, says the Alter Rebbe, Achar shemaimiko odom machshavto. After a person does what he told us to do in chapter 33, which is to go into in-depth reflection. Be'inyan bitul hanal. So after a person thinks about the concept of the real bitul that we talked about before, the oneness of Hashem, kefi yecholte as much as he possibly can, so after he does that, then he has to make the following reflection. He has to say like this. He says, a person thinks about Hashem, and then a person says, very nice. I understand the whole concept. I understand how the world is really one with Hashem. Nothing else besides Hashem, but I don't feel it the whole time. And I also understand how it's supposed to motivate me doing mitzvahs, and maybe it does to some degree, but the bottom line is, I don't feel that oneness the whole time. I get it in my brain, which is a very important step, I don't feel it the whole time. So what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to connect to that oneness? How am I supposed to bring that oneness into my being? Right? Says the Alter Rebbe, Zois Yoshi Valiba, this is what you need to think about. Kimeyois Koton Sichli, because my Seichel is very small, V'shoyrish Nishmosi, and my origin of my soul is very small, Mehochel, to really tolerate this properly, Liyois Merkova, Mishkan, to be a chariot and a wagon and a dwelling place like the Mishkan, Lichuda is brought to the oneness of Hashem, Be'meslam Mitoi, right? I can't really do this, Me'acha, the less Machshava, the Litvisa, because my Machshava, my thought, can't really grasp it properly. To really understand Hashem, Klalakal, Shuma Sogabo Ilam, Veloy Shemetz, Minun is not capable of even having a drop from the understanding of the Ovois and the prophets, right? Not even close, right? So therefore, how are we going to have a Mishkan for Hashem? The Ovois are not yet. Moshe Rabbeinu is not yet. The Mishkan is not yet. The prophets are not yet. So where are we going to find the Mishkan for Hashem? How are we going to build that Mishkan? Ilazoi says, therefore, the person has to think, therefore, which is coming off the back of understanding the oneness of Hashem, but just not feeling it constantly. And therefore having the desire to make a dwelling place for Hashem, to make a Mishkan for Hashem, where Hashem's presence can actually be in this world. What am I going to do, says the person? I'm going to make him a mishkan. How am I going to do that? I'm going to learn Torah. I'm going to learn Torah at least according to my time, according to the time I have, as much as I can. I'm going to set aside fixed times to learn in the morning and in the night. Kedas hanitna l'chol echad ve'echad behilchas Talmud Torah, as prescribed in the laws of learning Torah. Let me just explain that. Okay, let me just finish the sentence in the last minute. U'maymer azal l'chazal telas afilu perak echad shachris. It's not always like this. There's a mitzvah, there's two mitzvahs in the Torah. There's a mitzvah to learn Torah whenever we can, right? That's true. Then there's also a mitzvah of v'higisu bo yoyim v'layla. You're supposed to toil and learn Torah day and night. Say chazal, what does it mean day and night? Not everyone can do that. Some people have to work for a living, some people have to do other things, whatever. You have to eat, you have to sleep. I don't know, right? You can't. Yeah? The only very, very special people in history, like David HaMelech says, that he was just constantly learning Torah to the point where, at the end of his life, the Malach HaMavis couldn't get him. The angel of death came to take him and he couldn't. He had to, in the whole story in the Gemara, he had to distract him so he can, for his sake, take his Hashem back. Okay. Right? Okay, but even if someone's learning the whole day, but not everyone can learn all day. So there is a thing where Shulchan Aruch says you have to at least set time, reflect on your time, prioritize learning Torah, and make a time to learn every day. And to the point that the Shulchan Aruch says that for maybe there'll be some people that for them it'll just be learning one thing in the morning and one thing at night. Fine. But at least committed to that, right? Obviously a person has to try and do more than that, right? I was learning the Rambam the other day. You know, the Rambam, I have a shiur on Sunday morning, a few minutes to learn the Rambam. So we're doing the laws of learning of Torah. So it's interesting how the Rambam says, the Rambam is very into not being reliant on other people. He says, you got to go to work, right? But just look how the Rambam looks at this, right? You got to go to work. He explains how you have to divide Torah slightly into three parts, you know, one psukim, Mishnah, Gemara, whatever. So he says, if you have to go to work, it's different. So you got to just divide the time that you have left. For example, says the Rambam, someone's got to go to work. So he works for 3 hours. Now he's got 9 hours left to learn. Only 9 hours left to learn. So he tells us what to do with those 9 hours. I'm saying it's just a matter of priority, right? Time, as we know, you know, time is relative, right? It's what we make of it. It's how we prioritize. Okay, so obviously every person has to grow in that prioritization. I mean, a person lives his whole life and he's still learning the 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. It's a problem, but at least to start, okay, right? Start. Anyway, the bottom line is a person has to commit to learning Torah in the morning and the night, because when he learns Torah, he's mamash making a mishkan for Hashem. Because if you can understand a part of Torah, you have Hashem in your brain. You have Hashem in you. Because after the Beis HaMikdash destroyed, says the Gemara, Hashem only has one home, and that's the home of Torah. Yeah. And therefore, when you do that, again, it goes back to Simcha. You got to celebrate. And you have to just acknowledge and be grateful what you were able to achieve. That what? That you can host Hashem. Twice a day. In what way? Sorry? No. Yes, but they weren't understanding how this learning was mamash having Hashem in you. And
it's an interesting question.
Yeah. So it's an interesting question. I mean, people weren't even mitzvahs, they weren't learning Torah, they weren't from. I mean, they were, right?
They were.
Of course they were, but there was first of all a big divide, as we know, in Baal Shem Tov's time. There was a huge divide between the scholars and the common person. So it's very, very possible that the common person didn't understand that him learning 1 hour in the morning, even though it says in Shulchan Aruch, but or half an hour in the morning, or something that he can understand, even though he can't understand a deep, complex Gemara maybe, but he can go to a simple shir of Malacha or something, he didn't understand the value of that. All right? Number one. Number two, in the Talmud Al Tareb and the Baal Shem Tov, it became necessary to reveal a deeper part of Torah, to really be motivated to serve Hashem properly, and also to appreciate a deeper level. So we're not, it goes to a very general question, right? Why was Hasidus revealed when Hasidus was revealed, right? Yeah? If people managed all of the years without Hasidus, why didn't Hasidus fall? Or in more broader sense, why do we need Pnimiyus HaTorah? So the Rebbe talks about this in great detail in a Sikha and in many places. So there's two reasons given for this. One reason is because we're getting a taste of Mashiach. There's halacha, you know, we're in Friday now, right? There's 6 millennia, and now we're in Friday, and there's halacha, Mashiach is Shabbos, right? There's halacha that says in Shulchan Aruch, some people have a minhag, that on Friday you taste the foods of Shabbos. You ever saw this idea? Some people are very makbin, some people are very strict in this halacha, right? Not so much Shechabad, but there's a thing, you taste a little bit of the kugel, a little bit of the fish, right? So that's why Hashem gave us a gift of the Pnimiyus HaTorah, the inner essence of Torah, to have a taste of the Torah that will learn when Mashiach comes, right? Number one. Number two, on the other hand, it's an opposite reason. An opposite reason is that because the generations are so weak, right, it needs a stronger medicine. And why am I saying all this? Because we know from the stories of the Alter Rebbe that revealing the secrets of Torah, especially the way the Alter Rebbe did it, to make it so accessible that we could all learn it and understand it, was a very revolutionary. That was revolutionary. So much so that there was a, not so simple in Hashemayim, not everyone agreed to it. Right? There was a kitruk. And Alter Rebbe once gave a mashal like this, a famous mashal, that there was once a king who had a daughter, and the daughter was very, very sick and got worse and worse each day. And the doctors told her that there's only one medicine. There's a very, very special precious stone that if it's ground and mixed with water, and they give it to the thing. The only one problem is there's no way to find that precious stone, only in the crown of the king, which added a lot of beauty to the king's crown, right? So they try to put it off for a while, and the situation is getting really bad, until the king said, you know what, forget about my crown, take it off, and grind it. But by that time, she couldn't even drink. So the king said, grind it into water, and just pour and pour and pour, maybe one drop will go in, right? And that's a moshul on chassidus. So the daughter is so sick, so we need to put a lot of chassidus. Maybe one drop will have an effect, right? So as the Rebbe says, they're two opposite reasons, right? But they're not really opposite reasons, because that's what it is. Because we need more, Hashem has given us a gift of something much, much higher. We actually do have a taste of Mashiach, and that's what's keeping us going, right? So, yeah, people kept Torah mitzvahs, but the world was in a very big spiritual decline around the time of the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe. Especially for the common person. Yeah, there were big yeshivas, there were big things, but there were disconnect. And that's why Chassidus came about. But what the Alter Rebbe did was, it was a new gilui. He revealed a new understanding in the oneness of Hashem. Before the Alter Rebbe came along, no one was learning Torah and thinking about chapter 33 or 34 of Tanya. That's mamash bittel, and it's part of the thing, and it's like the Har Sinai and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You learn because you had to learn. Right? Therefore, the motivation to learn and the simcha that learning brings, says the Alter Rebbe, is amazing. You can host Hashem twice a day, right? According to the time that you have, and according to the time you can set aside, according to the allotment of time that Hashem has given you. And of course, obviously, the idea is that as time goes on, you try and find more time, so to speak. Okay. Bim yarchiv l'Hashem oid, right? And you make a very big resolve that I'm learning now for half an hour, but if Hashem will give me more time, I'll learn more. Tohir anayim yosif oimetz. And that very commitment that you say you will learn more, machshava toivah, is like a good thought, which we learned before, and sometimes at least when you have a commitment, you have a good intention, Hashem also considers it like an action. So really, it's considered more, even more than just learning for this half an hour, it's considered even, you're learning more because you have that commitment that if you're able to, you will. Okay, then Alter Rebbe says like this. But still, bottom line is you're only learning half an hour a day. So that's very good. You're making a mishkan only half an hour a day. So what's with the rest of the day? Right? So he says like this. He says, Gam shar hayoyim, and even the rest of the day. Gam shar hayoyim kuloy, even the rest of the day. Sh'oisek b'maso mat, and you're busy with business. That's what the analogy uses. Yeah, so you're not consciously learning Torah, which means now you might believe in the oneness of Hashem, But again, we come back to the same problem. You're not consciously making a Mishkan for Hashem. No, says, no. Yiyah mochon ha-shifta yizborach. You can still make a Mishkan for Hashem. You can still make a dwelling place for Hashem. How? Says, b'nesinas ha-tzedoka she'yiten mi-yegiyah. You can do it by giving tzedakah that you give from what you've earned. In other words, you can take what you're doing all day, not only business, giving business an example. You can take what you're doing all day and elevate it to a Mishkan. How? And he says, not only tzedakah, tzedakah doesn't mean money, by the way. Tzedakah means kindness in general. So why is that making a Mishkan for Hashem? Because when you give tzedakah, you help someone, you are doing something that's really the character traits of Hashem, as the Gemara says. Mahu rachum, just like Hashem is merciful, you should be merciful. Just like He's compassionate, you should be compassionate. Like it says in the Zohar, chesed roya yimino. Hashem's right hand is giving, right? It's a giving thing. Now, so you can say, okay, that's very nice. So I earn money, or I rested and I feel good, let's say, to in a different context. Or I've eaten and I feel strong. So I did kindness to someone else. But let's go back to money, to actual tzedakah, right? So, because it's easy to understand. So I earned $10,000 and I gave $1,000 away, even $2,000 away, right? What's the rest of the $8,000, right? So the $2,000 is a Mishkan Tashem. How about the time that I spent on the rest of the $8,000? She says, very simple. It's a very famous principle. Even though I only giving a fifth, but we have this concept, when he says fifth, because the Gemara says you're supposed to give tenth tzedakah, but really, if you can, you should give a fifth, right? And Al-Tareb is very always on tzedakah, is always on the machmer side, right? In fact, later on in Tanya, he talks about tshuva, he says that today we don't fast so much, right? Because we're not supposed to fast for tshuva. It's the Tanya we're learning these days now. But he says you should give a lot of tzedakah, because tzedakah atones for sins. And he says over there, how about the Gemara says you need to be responsible. You actually shouldn't give more than a fifth, right? You should give a tenth, and really you should give a fifth, but you shouldn't give more than a fifth because that's not being responsible. He says, no, it doesn't apply nowadays. Why? It's interesting. It doesn't apply nowadays because if you're giving tzedakah for spiritual strength because you have to do tshuva, he says, like spending money on medicine. So what's the difference? Would you spend more than a fifth on medicine if you needed to? You would. So he says, same thing, you got to spend more money on tzedakah. Anyway, that's a separate issue. But even if it's just a fifth. So you have a concept, the fifth elevates all the other four parts to be a Mishkan for Hashem. Yeah, because, how do we know this? Chazal tell us, the mitzvah of tzedakah is like the korbanos, like a korban. Now, what happened with the korban, you know, when you brought korbanos, I'll explain this outside first. Korbanos, on the Mizbeach, there was a representation of all four parts of the world. So you had the person bringing the korban who was staying next to the Mizbeach. You had an animal, which is part of the animal kingdom. You had wine libations and oil libations, sometimes flour. That's all part of the vegetation part of the world. And then there was always salt on the Mizbeach, which represents the doimem, the inanimate part of the world, right? What was the idea? With these things that went on the Mizbeach, they elevated each part of the world, but not that just elevated it. In other words, not just a little bit of flour you put on the Mizbeach became elevated. That flour you put on the Mizbeach elevated the whole flour of the whole world. Same thing over here. And a person, so let's just see what it says inside. The entire animal kingdom would be elevated through one animal. And all the vegetation, through a bit of flour that was mixed with oil, right? Yeah? So therefore, there's a way to make the rest of their Mishkan also. What is he really saying? He's saying that you have to make your life, your physical life, your routine life, God-centered, basically, right? In other words, there's a way to make that your whole day surrounds Hashem, is a Mishkan for Hashem. Yes, it starts with the Torah. The Torah is an open Mishkan for Hashem, of course. That's how you start, and that's where it's more intense. So you make a Mishkan for Hashem, you learn in the morning, you learn at night as much as you can. When you learn, you mamish Hashem's in you. Hashem is in His Torah, He's living in His Torah, right? But then, the rest of the day also, the fact that you're fulfilling Hashem's will, you're doing what Hashem wants, you're helping people, you're giving tzedakah, you're keeping halacha. But not only halacha is a given, but it's more than halacha, it's about giving up your regular life to serve Hashem, right? You know, the Rebbe would always quote, there's a famous Gemara, Ani nivresi l'shamash eskoini. I was created to serve my master, right? But there's two versions of that saying. In the Gemara, there's two, you know, sometimes you have a girsa, you have two versions of one Gemara. So there's a version that says, Ani nivresi, I was created to serve my master. And the Rebbe would often quote the second version, which is, Ani loy nivresi, I was not created Ella l'shamash eskoini, only to serve our master. What's the difference? Right? The difference is like this. The second version is deeper. Ani nivresi, I was created, means I'm created. I'm here. I exist. L'shamash eskoini, the purpose of me existing is to serve Hashem. The second one, a person gets a deeper appreciation. Ani loy nivresi, I don't exist altogether. If I exist, it's only to serve Hashem. In other words, what's the starting point, right? It's, I don't know if this is exactly the pshat here, but it's similar. In other words, the concept is that you need to make your whole life a mishkan for Hashem. Now, it doesn't mean being a wagon like the others, because we can't handle that anyway. And the whole purpose is for us to be a person and to make, right? But the point is bringing Hashem into our lives. Once you understand the concept of the oneness of Hashem, you want to then make a dwelling place for that Hashem. You want it to be felt somehow, on some level. So learning is a good start, because Hashem is Mamash and he's learning. But then the rest of the day also to elevate the rest of the day, make it godly, which means not just keeping mitzvahs, not just getting by, you know, getting out of trouble and doing the halachas you have to do, and that's it. It's much more than that. And that's really what Chassidus is about. That's really what Tanya is about. Not just about keeping the mitzvahs. Mitzvah is only a start. Mitzvah, of course, you have to keep mitzvahs. That's the will of Hashem. It's about working towards, at least, not everyone, we're all not able to do that, but working towards that our whole life is about Hashem. So yes, I've gone to business, it's not that I'm finished my shir, I closed the book and now I'm back in this world. No, you're not back in this world. You're back in a different part of the world also to bring Hashem there, by giving a fifth of the tzedakah that you earned to that, to help someone from the koiches that you have, right? And I says, and besides that, harbashasa Torah v'atzvili, even when you're learning and davening, you're elevating kol masha ochal v'osa, that which you ate, v'nen and ba'arba yodas, that which you use the other four parts for, to be healthy, kvish is boil kamen, as we can explain later on, but so you're elevating everything. When you elevate everything, you make it all godly, and then Hashem is dwelling in the world. But it starts from Torah, it starts from learning Torah. And then from that, to inspire the rest of the day, to make it a godly thing, to make it a godly experience. Again, obviously, again, we're never going to get to the point of Moshe Rabbeinu. We're not supposed to get to the point, right? That's the idea. The idea is, first of all, to internalize the concept of the oneness of Hashem, right? It always starts from the head. We have to develop perspectives. Perspectives is that there's only one thing that's important, and that's Hashem, because only wherever there is Hashem. Ein ol mulvada. And everything else is really bottle, right? Now, we ask the question, how do we do this in practice? Okay, so the Avos, they live this way. Moshe Rabbeinu embodied that concept. Nevi'im, etc., Beis HaMikdash, how do we do it? How do we do it? Torah learning and making the whole day godly. Now, are we all on that level? No, of course not. But that's like everything in Chassidus. It's the aspiration, it's the perspective, it's the outlook, it's the hashkafa. What's our view on life? And the more we build that, the more we can implement a little bit of that. That's the idea. Now, he ends off with a very interesting thing. He goes back to something he was talking about before, chapter 32. Because he explained in chapter 30, before chapter 32, 31, 30, he says that one of the ways, don't forget, we have a nefesh lakis, a nefesh abamis, right? And what he's been talking about in the last two chapters is that we understand this principle of oneness of Hashem and we implement it, the happiness is unbelievable. The simcha should be unbelievable. We're learning Torah. We should be so happy that we're hosting Hashem. The rest of the day we give tzedakah, we're hosting Hashem. It's amazing. Hashem's with us. So now he goes back and says, but don't forget, I also talked about beating up yourself a little bit, which is not really simcha, right? To feel humble, to feel low sometimes. He spoke about in the context of your nefesh abamis is blocking your access to godliness. So sometimes you've got to beat up the nefesh abamis and tell him what kind of klipa he is, right? Well, that's not very simchadik. So he says, Vine b'chol prote mine simchis ha-nefesh ha-na'o. All these types of simcha that I've been talking about, which was in 31 and 33 and now in 34, ain mehen menir, that does not stop a person At the same time, Leo is nivzeh be'einov nimas v'leiv nishbar, to be really low within himself and have a broken heart sometimes. V'ruach namucha, and a low spirit, when he's feeling really distant from Hashem. A feeling of yearning, a feeling of upsetness. That's also important. How can you do that with simcha? Shasa simcha mamash. No, he says you can do it at the same time as a simcha. Why? Because the fact that you are not in a good mood, you're sort of upset. That's mitzad aguf nefesh habamis. That's because of the nefesh habamis. Your animal soul. The yois pesimcha. Where's your simcha coming from? Mitzad nefesh alakis, from the godly soul. The nitzus alakush hamalubish bo, and the godly spark that is in it. Lacha yois kanal that keeps it alive, as we said in Per 31. That's about this that the Zohar says. There's a famous Zohar. Zohar says, crying is rooted in the heart on one side, and happiness is rooted in the heart on the other side. And they're not a contradiction. It's a hard thing to understand, but they're not a contradiction. Right? Again, I always come back to the Chassidim that I knew, and I saw you saw it, but the real Chassidim who lived Tanya, he saw this all the time. But a mental foot device all the time. He put himself down. He would think he could have a good cry by davening. And he was the happiest person at the same time. He was happy just to be close with Hashem, that's all. Right? And the two things are not really a contradiction. They can happen at the same time, which is difficult. But we Yidden are able to do it. We're able to carry opposites, like we saw last few years in different ways. But we're able to carry opposites. There's a yearning and sometimes a guilt, a healthy guilt, I mean. Healthy upsetness even, not the whole time, of course, but in certain times, designated times, as we learned before, that has to take place when you're thinking about your nefesh habamis, because nefesh habamis gets in the way. And therefore, the way to soften it and to weaken it is to reflect on how far it is from Hashem and how much it's blocking our way to access Hashem. And that reflection itself weakens the nefesh habamis and lets the godliness come in. And at the same time, when we think about Anashama, what we're doing for Anashama, we should be the happiest people that were able to host Hashem, live with Hashem, be one with Hashem, and so on. All right.